Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we've got a lot of important local, state, and national news for you, plus some hot events coming up across San Diego's inland region. Newly elected Assemblymember Akilah Weber has introduced her first bill to set a task force up on a pathway out of the pandemic, and we'll have details. 1 year ago, a racial justice protest turned into a night of violence in La Mesa, where looting and arson destroyed three buildings and damaged dozens more. Today, we'll have a special report on the aftermath of that civil unrest, including lessons learned and changes that the city and its police force have made. If you're driving in El Cajon the next couple of weekends, you'll want to listen up for information on bridge repairs and freeway closures that could affect your route. Next up, we'll have a report on East County's Advanced Water Purification Program, which is moving forward thanks to a large federal loan. La Mesa City Council is moving toward a special election to fill the vacancy left by Akilah Weber's election to the Assembly, but the date and costs remain uncertain, and we'll have details. If you plan to visit any lakes in California, the state is warning to beware of toxic algae blooms in some places that could harm you or your pets. Learn more on today's show. Restaurants will be able to continue selling alcohol to go, the governor has announced. And in other state news, California is now officially an age-friendly state. President Biden visited Arlington National Cemetery on Memorial Day, where he commemorated those who lost their lives to protect our freedoms. And he said the threats to democracy pose a challenge for us all. We'll have excerpts of his speech later on today. Also on the second half of our show, we'll have some national news headlines from Public News Service, including the debate over whether to end the filibuster in Congress, escalating gun violence, former President Trump's return to the public stage, and Vice President Kamala Harris's trip to Central America to address the root causes of migration. Now, if you love counting sheep, but not to sleep, the annual Anza Borrego Desert Bighorn Sheep Count is coming up, and we'll have the wild and woolly details on how you can participate on today's show. Learn about a new county program to make a medication to reverse drug overdoses available to the public. Movies in the Park are back, both live and online, as well as some drive-through options. Plus, on Destination East County today, hear about more festivals and events coming back, including parades, car shows, concerts, and a comedy show. From California News Service, learn why nurseries are being asked to help save butterflies and bees, and how you can help protect our pollinators. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
East County's newly elected Assemblymember Akilah Weber, a medical doctor, has introduced her first bill, AB 1207. The measure would create a, quote, pathway through pandemic task force to collect and analyze California's COVID-19 data and develop a response plan for future pandemics. On Facebook, Dr. Weber wrote, quote, California's response to the pandemic highlighted existing inequities for people of color and low-income neighborhoods. It's important that we address the lessons learned from the pandemic. The bill by the Democratic legislator passed the Assembly unanimously with strong bipartisan support, including a yes vote from East County's Republican Assemblymember Randy Vopel. Dr. Weber thanked her co-author on the bill, Assemblymember Luz Rivas, adding, quote, together, we are ensuring we do everything we can to invest in sustainable plans that value the life and health of all Californians during a pandemic. The bill now advances to the State Senate for consideration. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Alexa Oslowski.
A racial justice protest on May 30th, 2020 drew thousands of people to La Mesa. It was one of many demonstrations held across the nation in the wake of the killing of George Floyd, a black man, under the knee of a Minneapolis police officer since found guilty of murder. But what began as a peaceful march erupted into a night of looting, vandalism, and the burning down of three buildings in La Mesa's historic downtown district, shocking and terrifying the community. 1 year later, the city has made strides toward accountability for those responsible, improving policing, healing racial rifts, helping businesses that were harmed, and moving forward with rebuilding plans. Mayor Mark Arapostathis called the experience traumatic during a private event at La Mesa First United Methodist Church to commemorate the one-year anniversary, adding that the city must learn from the tragedy to remember what can happen when people feel excluded. Assemblymember Akilah Weber, who was a La Mesa council member during the turbulent events, recalled May 30th last year as a promising day when people turned out to stand up against the unjust killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis, as well as to protest a La Mesa police officer's controversial stop of Amare Johnson, a young black man, in a videotaped incident widely viewed as racial profiling. Dr. Weber also voiced sadness that the protest turned into a night of pain and destruction. But, she concluded, we turned that pain into a new purpose. We made sure we told our story of who La Mesa is, and who the residents are, and who the businesses are. Adding, we will not be defined by one incident. Her mother, Secretary of State Shirley Weber, called love, inclusion, justice, and freedom a rare flower that requires attention. By contrast, she said, hatred and discrimination are weeds that grow best in neglect. Some leveled criticism at the event organizers, La Mesa Conversations and Envision La Mesa, for excluding some voices at the private invitation-only commemoration. Christina Licio, a former La Mesa council member, posted on Facebook, a true day of remembrance would have been public, involved those who suffered the losses and were terrified. The East County Inquirer questioned why no invitations were sent to the East County Chamber of Commerce and local business leaders and political leaders who raised over $250,000 to help businesses pay for repairs caused by looting, vandalism, and fires. During the past year, the city and its police department have made significant changes and strides toward healing the community. La Mesa has established a Citizens Police Oversight Board, comprised of a broad spectrum of community members to investigate future complaints of excessive use of force by police. Later protests held in the city remained peaceful, including one staged by motorcyclists at which a photo went viral of then-Chief Walt Vasquez hugging a burly black biker. One can only speculate what might have happened if protesters had been met by police or city officials responsive to their concerns when they first knocked on the police station door the afternoon of May 30th last year. With no response, the crowd became increasingly hostile, and by evening, the police station was under siege. Some said outside instigators came to join in the melee. Rocks and bottles were hurled at officers. La Mesa police and sheriff's deputies fired tear gas, pepper spray, and beanbag rounds at protesters after the crowd ignored orders to disperse when an unlawful assembly was declared. Burning Molotov cocktails were thrown at the police station, and protesters broke windows in a sheriff's armed vehicle with officers inside. Multiple protesters were injured, including a woman struck in the forehead by a beanbag round fired by a La Mesa police officer, and she is suing the city. The violence soon escalated beyond the police station. Multiple vehicles were set on fire. Another fire was ignited inside City Hall, but was swiftly doused. A Vons Market at the La Mesa Springs Shopping Center was set afire, prompting a response from officers in riot gear. Dozens of businesses along La Mesa Boulevard and elsewhere were broken into and looted. In the middle of the night, the Union and Chase banks were set aflame, followed by the Randall Lamb Building in the heart of the city's historic district. Mutual Aid did not arrive to fight those fires, since it was deemed too dangerous for firefighters, with people still pelting rocks and bottles until the sheriff took command after midnight and arrests were made in the wee hours of the morning. With the burned building still smoldering the next morning, over 600 people from across East County turned out to help clean up. They came armed with mops, brooms, paint, and rollers. Restaurants already hurt by the pandemic shutdowns donated food to feed cleanup crews. These actions helped restore La Mesans' faith in humanity and the inherent goodness of residents and neighbors in nearby communities who also came to help. In an exclusive interview with East County Magazine a week after that riot, La Mesa Police Chief Walt Vasquez said the outreach is already starting. I've had people reaching out to me, and he promised, as we progress through this and start the healing, those kind of outreach and changes will happen without a doubt. Chief Vasquez, however, announced his retirement soon after, and a nationwide search for his replacement continues. Mayor Arapostathis, in an interview with this reporter in the riot's aftermath, said he was devastated and sorry for what happened. He pledged reforms, adding, nothing is off the table, and many reforms have occurred. The City Council commissioned an independent report on the response to the protest and riot. La Mesa police banned chokeholds and changed police policy to terminate officers found to have lied. The city also held police meetings with a goal to improve communications with residents, since notifications were glaringly lacking during that long night. The police department did improve notifications during subsequent protests, tweeting out frequent updates during the ensuing tense times, including when National Guard troops were sent to maintain peace in the city in the days after the unrest. The city of La Mesa fired Officer Matt Dages, who has also been criminally charged with falsifying a police report in which he accused Amare Johnson of assault, an assertion not backed up by multiple videos. The city did not charge Johnson, who has since filed a lawsuit of his own against the city, and Dages has also filed a lawsuit against La Mesa seeking his position back, putting the city in a no-win situation. Dozens of accused looters and rioters have been arrested and charged. Most notably, Ricky Bernard Cooper and Alexander Jacob King face arson charges for burning down the Chase Bank building, according to the FBI. Daniel Sandoval of Campbell was charged with arson and felony vandalism of the historic Wandalam building, according to Lieutenant Greg Runge with La Mesa Police. And those arrested were of all races and backgrounds. But no charges have yet been filed for the burning down of Union Bank, a crime that remains unsolved. Union Bank recently installed a trailer with an ATM on its downtown site and has announced plans to start rebuilding this summer, with hopes to reopen by year's end. A sign posted on its fence reads, "All we need is love. Rebuilding together." Chase Bank, too, has indicated that it plans to rebuild, but its efforts are expected to take longer since Chase does not own the land. However, the Wandalam site's future remains uncertain, as the company has not announced any decision to rebuild, nor any other use yet planned for its still-vacant lot downtown. In the aftermath of the riot, artists turned out to paint murals on plywood boarding up windows in the downtown village. The Pink Rose Cafe, stymied from opening by both a riot and the pandemic, adorned its facade with a wall of pink roses. And this spring, the Pink Rose Cafe finally attained its dream of opening in a symbol of resilience. The riot left emotional scars on residents, business owners, protesters, police officers, and reporters who covered the protest and riot. San Diego Union-Tribune reporter Karen Perlman posted at the time, "The smell of tear gas is not going away, and I may have PTSD." 1 year later, she posted, she's been in therapy for the trauma of that night. East County Magazine reporters covering the event were also hit by tear gas and, in one case, pepper spray. Our team included Henry Magala, who covered the peaceful protest and the start of civil unrest at the police station, Rebecca Jeffress Williamson, who was the first reporter on the scene as vandals broke into the Target and Walmart stores at Grossmont Center, Paul Cruz, who covered looting and vandalism at La Mesa Springs Shopping Center and the torching of vehicles downtown, and Jake Rose, who remained downtown late at night to capture videos and photos of the burning down of multiple buildings, including shots of arsonists in action. Editor Miriam Raftery, that's me, worked through the night, gathering information about the events unfolding across the city, making phone calls to officials, and stayed up to cover the events the next morning when the cleanup began. Reporter Henry Magala reflected, "Was this only last year when I got shot about 5 times with pepper spray bullets by police and had to be led away and my eyes flushed? All I was doing at the time was just sitting on the curb resting because my back was aching after being there for so many hours." Magala was also assaulted and threatened with violence at a later La Mesa protest in August. Those assailants have still not been identified. The violence in La Mesa led to formation of controversial vigilante groups, including Defend East County, which ostensibly formed to protect businesses across East County from feared future looting or vandalism. The group first appeared in Santee and later other cities, but gained notoriety after some engaged in violent clashes with protesters and were caught on video hurling racial slurs and rocks at peaceful protesters in Santee. Defend East County was ultimately banned by Facebook after racist posts and some posts advocating violence. Tasha Williamson, the racial justice activist and firebrand who organized the La Mesa protest, posted on the anniversary of the civil unrest in La Mesa that the events did lead to constructive changes, including meetings with La Mesa's mayor, city manager, Councilmember Weber, and Police Chief Vasquez to discuss policy changes, many of which have since been implemented after citizens turned up at council meetings, sent emails, or made phone calls, she observed. This was all done because of so many leaders, residents, attorneys, and supporters' efforts, Williamson wrote on Facebook. This is what the will of the people looks like. It may not be perfect, But so much was accomplished, she concluded, adding, Black Lives Matter. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Caltrans crews are working on bridge repairs at the intersection of Interstate 8 and State Route 67 in the El Cajon area. The work will require full closures over two consecutive weekends, starting on Friday, June 11th and again on Friday, June 18th. Motorists are encouraged to avoid the area if possible and to prepare for delays by allowing additional travel time to reach their destinations. In addition, ongoing lane closures on both directions of I-8 from a half mile west of Valentine Street to just east of Valentine Street will continue Sunday through Thursday nights from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. The first weekend closure will begin at 9 p.m. on Friday, June 11th through 5 a.m. on Monday, June 14th. The closures will include all eastbound lanes of Interstate 8 near Valentine Street, the eastbound exit from I-8 to northbound Highway 67 and Broadway Avenue, and the westbound exit from I-8 to southbound 67 and Magnolia Avenue. Closures and detours will continue on Friday, June 18th, starting at 9 p.m. through Monday, June 21st at 5 a.m. Here's what will be closed the second weekend. A full highway closure of all westbound lanes of Interstate 8 from a half mile west of Valentine Street to just east of Valentine. The exit from northbound Highway 67 to westbound 8. The exit from southbound Highway 67 to eastbound 8. The Mollison Avenue on-ramp to westbound 8.A detour map will be provided before the closure dates. Detours will be in place during the construction schedule. Caltrans asked motorists to please drive with caution during the extended repair work, which is slated for completion in mid-August.
East County's largest infrastructure project, the Advanced Water Purification Program, got a big boost toward its completion this month when it was awarded a $388 million low-rate federal loan. That's about half the total cost possible for the project, and the loan was cause for celebration on June 4th at the Raystover Water Reclamation Facility out in Santee, the site for the planned water purification plant. The project has been in the planning stages since 2014 and aims to solve the regional problems of reduced water supply and increasing costs of importing this vital resource. The solution, already used by some other Southern California districts, including San Diego and Oceanside, entails reusing and purifying sewage now being pumped out to a San Diego treatment plant before it's discharged back to the Pacific Ocean. Advocates say that after undergoing the advanced water purification steps, the treated sewage water will actually be more pure than treated Colorado River water already in use here. Padre Dam Water District in Santee imports 100% of its water. So Padre Dam joined forces with the Helix Water District, the City of El Cajon, and San Diego County to form a joint powers authority which creates and oversees the Advanced Water Purification Program. And now, after years of planning and engineering, contracts are ready to be awarded for construction of the facility and miles of pipelines. Officially, the estimated cost of the project is $642 million, but according to documents submitted to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to qualify for the Water Infrastructure and Innovative Finance Act loan, the agency has authorization to spend up to $790 million. Steve Goebel, the chairman of the JPA and an El Cajon City Councilman, said the cost of materials, especially for steel, is a big reason behind the escalating estimate. Steel has gone up about 300%, he says, but adds that the cost of not building the project could be even more. When the project is finally completed in 2025, the sewage now being pumped to San Diego's Point Loma wastewater treatment plant, that's about 15 million gallons a day, will be directed to the plant in Santee. After undergoing four stages of purification, converting it to near-distilled quality, the water will then be pumped to Lake Jennings, where it will be blended with existing water, and finally treated one more time at the R.M. Levy water treatment plant before it's distributed to customers. The system is geared to treat about 11 million gallons daily, providing about 30% of our region's water needs. The unrelenting cost for importing water is only getting worse. Last month, the San Diego County Water Authority proposed hiking rates that it charges its member agencies by 3.3% due to the increased costs the CWA is charged by the Metropolitan Water District up in Los Angeles. Ultimately, those hikes will be passed on to businesses, government agencies, and residential customers. The Advanced Water Purification Program here in East County will provide more than purified drinking water. It's also expected to generate about 2,500 jobs, including design, construction, and maintenance, as well as 40 permanent staffing jobs once the project is completed. Goebel and other officials behind the Advanced Water Purification Program assert that the big costs involved with creating the reclamation system will be recouped down the road. But if the forecasts change, the Joint Powers Authority still has the opportunity to pull the plug by next February. Goebel concludes, if it's not a better deal for the ratepayers, we won't do it. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The La Mesa City Council is on track to fill Dr. Akilah Weber's former seat with a special election, but the date remains uncertain. The vacancy occurred after Dr. Weber won a special election to the State Assembly, filling a vacancy left when her mother, Shirley Weber, Ph.D., was appointed Secretary of State. The council has until June 18th to fill the seat or announce an election. If there is no majority favoring an appointment by that deadline, under the city charter, an election must be held. On April 27th, the council meeting ended in no decision after a 2-2 vote with Mayor Mark Rapostathis and Councilman Bill Baber in favor of an election, while Councilmen Jack Hsu and Colin Parent favored an appointment to save taxpayers money. A special election could cost from around $250,000 to more than $750,000, depending on when it is held, if the election can be timed to coincide with the ballot to recall Governor Gavin Newsom. It would be substantially lower than a freestanding election. Voter turnout would probably also be higher if La Mesa's election is on the same ballot as the gubernatorial recall. However, the state's deadline to announce the Newsom recall election isn't until July 11th, which could come too late for La Mesa's June 18th deadline. So, on May 11th, a still-divided city council agreed to monitor the California Secretary of State's office for the announcements of the recall election for Governor Newsom. All council members support scheduling an emergency meeting on or before June 18th, as soon as the recall election date is announced. If no announcement from the state is made by then, the council will set a date to vote on Dr. Weber's replacement. Public comments from both meetings showed more residents were in favor of allowing a special election. And, according to the city clerk, La Mesa also received 103 emails in favor of holding a special election and just 13 emails in favor of a council appointment. With Dr. Weber no longer on the city council, there are no women and no black members, leaving out representation for key constituencies that helped elect Weber, as many speakers pointed out. Some also shared concerns that an appointment could raise conflict of interest concerns, an issue that has come up with Councilman Colin Parent over his ties to housing developers. Members of the public who wanted an appointment said they believe that a special election is a poor use of taxpayers' money and that an appointment selection is part of the City Council's responsibility. Councilman Parent noted that for the last special election, the voter turnout was under 20% in La Mesa. Parent said there should be as many efforts as possible to engage voters and create a higher turnout if a special election is held, though he prefers an appointment. In other action, the City Council voted for Councilman Hsu to replace Dr. Weber as Vice Mayor until August of this year, after which he will serve another term as Vice Mayor until August 2022. That will make Hsu one of the longest-serving Vice Mayors in the city's history. Reporting from La Mesa for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Goetz.
Community activists are urging California lawmakers to reject two bills that would limit local control in order to clear the way for 5G small cell wireless equipment near homes, schools, and businesses. Supporters of the bills cite the economic benefits of improved high-speed broadband. However, multiple cities are fighting the 5G rollout, citing concerns about health, safety, and property values. Doug Wood with the nonprofit Americans for Responsible Technology notes the League of California Cities opposes both bills.
It gives the telecoms free rein to install this equipment pretty much wherever they want and puts unreasonable time limits on a city's permitting process. You know, the only people benefiting from these bills are the telecoms, not Californians.
Senate Bill 556 would require municipalities to make space available at low rates for communications service providers. It passed the Senate and is now in two assembly committees. And Assembly Bill 537 would force cities to go to court if they want to deny a permit for a location. It has passed in several assembly committees with bipartisan support. The telecom companies argue that installing 5G statewide will give low-income communities a leg up. But Larry Ortega with the nonprofit Community Union says wired municipal broadband is a better option. He adds these bills do nothing to address the cost to the consumer.
You know, many of our kids are not going to be able to afford 5G, so there's going to be an increase in cost, which is the primary barrier in the digital divide.
In terms of health concerns, a 2018 study from the National Institutes of Health found radio frequency radiation used in cell phones and 5G antennas caused heart and brain tumors in male rats. However, the FCC has declared cell phones safe. Detractors say the standards the FCC used to make that determination are decades old and flawed. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
With the weather warming up, the California Water Resources Control Board is warning the public that harmful algal blooms, or HABs, can flourish in summer and cause serious health impacts for humans and pets. Marissa Van Dyke, an environmental scientist with the State Water Board, says children and dogs playing in the water are especially vulnerable to HABs, exposure, and illness. Most harmful algal blooms are formed by cyanobacteria, small microbes that multiply rapidly during warm weather in slow-moving water, forming these harmful blooms. Drought conditions also drive up growth of HABs when water levels are below normal. Recently, the state's water board and partner groups gathered water samples from lakes and streams with a history of HABs and published cautions, warnings, or danger ratings where the harmful blooms were found. Harmful algal blooms could be a variety of colors, such as green, white, red, or brown, and may look like thick paint floating or small flakes on the water. Not all HABs appear on the water's surface. Some form mats at the bottom of a water body. Others float at various depths. Look closely at the bottom of a lake or stream before entering the water. The State Water Board recommends that people practice healthy water habits while enjoying the outdoors this summer at your local lake, river, or stream. Heed all instructions on posted advisories if present. Avoid algae and scum in the water and on the shore. Keep an eye on children and pets. If you think a harmful algal bloom is present, do not let pets and other animals go into the water or drink the water or eat algal scum on the shore. Don't drink the water or use it for cooking. Wash pets and people with clean water after any water play. If you catch a fish, throw away guts and clean fillets with tap water or bottled water before cooking. And avoid eating shellfish if you think a harmful algal bloom is present. Recreational exposure to cyanobacteria and associated toxins can cause eye irritation, skin rash, mouth ulcers, vomiting, diarrhea, and cold and flu-like symptoms. Dogs are most susceptible because they often drink while in the water and lick their fur afterwards, increasing their risk of illness. Symptoms with animals include vomiting or diarrhea, lethargy, abnormal liver function, trouble breathing, foaming at the mouth, muscle twitching, and even death. Get medical treatment immediately if you think that you, your pet, or your livestock has gotten sick after going in the water. Be sure to alert a medical professional to the possible contact with cyanobacteria. Also, make sure to notify the local county public health department to report a harmful algal bloom or call the HAB hotline toll-free at 1-844-729-6466. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Mitchell Murphy.
restaurants across California will be able to continue offering a profitable service that evolved during the COVID-19 pandemic, selling alcoholic beverages to go, Governor Gavin Newsom has announced. Newsom also said the state will encourage local jurisdictions to permit restaurants and bars to keep operating outdoors on sidewalks and in parking lots, although such operations are still subject to local zoning regulations. The governor made the announcement while visiting Tommy's Mexican restaurant in San Francisco. Newsom said, California's restaurants helped create the vibrant and diverse communities that make California the envy of the world. As the state turns to post-pandemic life, we'll continue to adapt best practices that have helped businesses transform customer experiences for the better. Outdoor dining and the sale of to-go alcoholic beverages emerged during the pandemic to help restaurants struggling to survive under strict COVID regulations, which forced indoor dining to close for months. Newsom noted that while the sale of to-go alcohol will be able to continue, such sales will have to be coupled with food purchases. The extended rules announced by the governor will also allow bars to continue partnering with food trucks, catering companies, or restaurants to sell meals with alcoholic beverages. With new opportunities and support for businesses large and small, and the California can-do spirit that has carried us through the past year, we will come roaring back from this pandemic, Newsom predicts. The California Republican Party, however, scoffed at Newsom's announcement, deeming it a hollow gesture to an industry that, quote, suffered more than most under Gavin Newsom's overbearing shutdowns, unquote. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
California is now officially an age-friendly state thanks to a new partnership between the California Department of Aging and AARP. The nonprofit is lending its expertise to help implement the state's new master plan for aging, which was released in January. Kim McCoy-Wade, director of the California Department on Aging, says the master plan has five overarching goals.
The first goal is housing for all ages and stages. California needs to build many more diverse and affordable types of housing. The second goal is health reimagined. We know folks want health that allows them to stay at home and live independently.
The other goals include policies to support inclusion and equity, support caregivers, and work to lower the cost of living for older Americans. Research shows that by 2030, one of every five people in the U.S. will be 65 or older. And by 2035, the number of adults older than 65 will be greater than the number of children under 18. McCoy-Wade says AARP's roster of public policy experts has informed the debate on a range of topics.
That expertise and that network has been enormously helpful in shaping the plan and now will help us to make it a reality.
More than 50 California communities are also part of the program. It shares best practices on ways to make their towns more livable for all ages, which informs decisions on housing, transportation, green space, and more. The other states and territories in the network of age-friendly states and communities include Colorado, Florida, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, New York, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
President Joe Biden laid a Memorial Day wreath with red, white, and blue flowers at the tomb of the unknown soldier at Arlington National Cemetery.
Remember those who gave their all in the service of America, in the service of freedom, in the service of justice. Remember their sacrifice, their valor, and their grace. Remember their smiles, their loves, their laughter, their essential, vibrant, and transcendent humanity.
Later,
to those who mourn a loved one today, Jill and I have some idea how you're feeling. Our losses are not the same, but that black hole you feel in your chest as if it's going to suck you into it, we get. I know the incredible pride you felt seeing your loved one wear the uniform of our country and the pride they felt wearing it.
Said President Biden, referring to the passing of his eldest son, who served in Iraq later dying of cancer, and the president's first wife and youngest daughter dying in a car crash on their way to select a family Christmas tree. The president recalled the origins of Memorial Day in the wake of the Civil War over the preservation of our Constitution, then noted that there are hundreds of graves at Arlington from soldiers who lost their lives in more recent conflicts, from two world wars to the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Later, President Biden spoke about democracy, calling it the soul of America.
Democracy, that's the soul of America. And I believe it's a soul worth fighting for, and so do you, a soul worth dying for. Heroes who lie in eternal peace in this beautiful place, this sacred place, they believe that too. The soul of America is animated by the perennial battle between our worst instincts, which we've seen of late, and our better angels, between me first and we the people, between greed and generosity, cruelty and kindness, captivity and freedom. The Americans of Lexington and Concord, of New Orleans, Gettysburg, the Argonne, Iwo Jima, Normandy, Korea and Vietnam, Afghanistan and Iraq, and thousands of places in between. These Americans weren't fighting for dictators. They were fighting for democracy. They weren't fighting to exclude or to enslave. They were fighting to build and broaden and liberate. They weren't fighting for self. They were fighting for the soul of the nation, for liberty and simple, fair play. Simple, fair play and decency.
He emphasized, what we do now, how we honor the memory of the fallen, will determine whether or not democracy will long endure.
And the mission falls to each of us, each and every day. Democracy itself is in peril, here at home and around the world. We all take it for granted. We think we learn in school. You have to, every generation has to fight for it. Whether that system can and will prevail against powerful forces that wish it harm.
Biden noted that the struggle for democracy is taking place around the world between democracy and autocracy.
Democracy thrives when the infrastructure of democracy is strong. When people have the right to vote freely and fairly and conveniently. When a free and independent press pursues the truth founded on facts, not propaganda. When the rule of law applies equally and fairly to every citizen, regardless of where they come from, what they look like.
He called on Americans to honor the sacrifice of soldiers who gave their life for our freedoms by, quote, sustaining the best of America while honestly confronting all that we must do to make our nation fuller, freer, and more just. And he concluded, to this battle, may we now dedicate our souls, that our work may prove worthy of the blood of the fallen. For this work, the work of democracy, is the work of our time and for all time. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Enough is enough. No more thoughts and prayers. It's time for action. It's time to save lives.
Today is National Gun Violence Awareness Day, and Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington urged the Senate to end the filibuster to pass gun safety legislation. So far in 2021, there have been about 240 mass shootings, 8,100 gun deaths, and 51,000 gun injuries. When Republicans filibustered a proposed January 6th commission, calls grew louder to end the Senate practice. However, Democrats Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin remain opposed to changes. Sinema argues it encourages compromise.
It is a tool that protects the democracy of our nation rather than allowing our country to ricochet wildly every 2 to 4 years back and forth between policies.
To reach a compromise on his infrastructure bill, President Joe Biden proposes keeping 2017 Republican tax cuts intact and instead to strengthen tax enforcement on the wealthy and close corporate loopholes. The two sides' proposals are still $750 billion apart. Tribal nations will get $1 billion in COVID relief for broadband infrastructure. As she announced the funding, Vice President Kamala Harris called on Congress to pass the American Jobs Plan with $100 billion for broadband nationwide.
It would increase competition and reduce costs so that every American, no matter where they live, no matter how much they can pay, would be able to access high-speed internet at home.
The administration also revealed its plan to share 25 million COVID-19 vaccines globally. More than four dozen countries requested vaccines, And National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says the goal is to donate 80 million doses by the end of the month.
The United States is not doing this as some kind of back and forth deal where we're getting something for what we're giving. We are giving these for a single purpose. It is the purpose of ending this pandemic.
Most doses will go through the global vaccine aid program COVAX, the rest to specific countries. In a meeting with Israeli Defense Minister Benny Gantz Thursday, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin reaffirmed the administration's support for Israel's right to defend itself and noted Biden's hope for a two-state solution between Israel and Palestine.
I want to stress the importance of reducing tensions in the West Bank and Jerusalem and of supporting humanitarian and reconstruction assistance for Gaza that benefits the innocent people who live there.
Meanwhile, a bipartisan trio of lawmakers crossed the Atlantic this week to reaffirm the U.S. commitment to Eastern European partners. Ukraine, Senator Rob Portman pledged to strengthen U.S. ties and continue military support.
We talked about other assistance we can provide on the economic front, on the reform front, even pushing back against Russian disinformation.
The trip also included visits to Lithuania and Georgia. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy is reportedly under investigation by the Department of Justice for violating campaign contribution laws. According to the Washington Post, DeJoy pressured private employees to donate to Republican candidates, which he would reimburse through bonuses. DeJoy denies the allegations.
He likes television more than any politician in this room, and they like television. But he's been wrong on almost every issue, and he was wrong on Wuhan and the lab also, very wrong.
Speaking at North Carolina's state Republican convention, former President Trump called on China to pay reparations for COVID-19 and took jabs at Dr. Anthony Fauci. Thousands of the chief medical advisor's emails have been made public, with most mainstream news outlets saying they contained little of any importance. Facebook announced it is suspending Trump for 2 years, citing severe violations after the January 6th riot, and saying it would no longer grant politicians and public figures special consideration. Department of Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm toured West Virginia with Senator Joe Manchin and discussed the White House infrastructure plan. West Virginia House Delegate Evan Hansen says the state must position itself to benefit from a clean energy economy.
The secretary being here is an indication that President Biden and his team care about states like West Virginia and the impact that climate policies are having on real people and real communities.
Over the weekend, Manchin said he'll vote against sweeping voting protections passed by the House in March. The For the People Act would set national standards for election laws, including no-excuse mail-in voting and automatic registration. Total student loan debt has now surpassed more than $1.5 trillion. The individual average is more than $32,000. Ashley Harrington at the Center for Responsible Lending says federal grant programs haven't kept up with the cost of higher ed.
We've also failed to take into account that this is part of a larger system that is inherently inequitable. And a debt finance model in a society like ours that is so inequitable was never going to work or be sustainable.
City governments, including the District of Columbia, are stepping up pressure on the president to tackle the issue. Many have passed resolutions calling on the federal government to cancel student loan debt. Vice President Kamala Harris left for Latin America under intense pressure to reduce the number of migrants coming to the border. In April alone, U.S. Customs and Border Protection encountered almost 180,000. Nearly half of whom were from Central America. In Delaware, President Joe Biden spoke about the latest jobs report. Last month, wages rose by 2% as the economy created nearly 600,000 jobs.
That means we have now created over 2 million jobs in total since I took office. More jobs than ever been created in the first 4 months of any presidency in modern history.
The unemployment rate is now below 6% for the first time since the pandemic hit. And in Tel Aviv, Israel's security service issued a warning about possible political violence targeting lawmakers seeking to oust Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Nadia Ramlagan. Thanks for listening.
For the past half century, teams of volunteers have ventured into rugged terrain and triple-digit heat to count bighorn sheep in Anza Borrego Desert State Park. The count is done in summer when the hot weather drives bighorn down to lower elevations for water where they can be more easily observed. Last year, the count was partially curtailed due to COVID-19, but this year, the count is slated to occur July 1st through July 4th. Back in 2019, the last full census, 273 sheep were observed. But in 2020, with some locations off limits and counters limited to local residents, only 90 sheep were seen. If you would like to volunteer to help count sheep, you can contact Coordinator Michael Puzo at absheepcount@parks.ca.gov. That's AB as in Anza Borrego, sheep, SHEEP, count, COUNT, at parks.ca.gov. You'll need to fill out a reservation form and attend an orientation on June 19th to participate in the July count. Though last year marked the 50th year of counting sheep in Anza Borrego, the anniversary will be officially recognized this year. The count presents a rare opportunity for volunteers to view and photograph these elusive desert denizens, also aiding wildlife experts to assess populations of these endangered animals. The community of Borrego Springs is named for bighorn, after the Spanish word borrego, meaning sheep. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
San Diego County health officials are blaming the COVID-19 pandemic stresses for doubling overdose deaths from fentanyl over the last year. To help save lives, the county will begin offering nasal naloxone to the general public at several community-based locations and clinics. Naloxone is a nasal spray medication designed to rapidly reverse an opioid overdose and quickly restore normal breathing and alertness. The overdose reversal drug will be available at no cost and without a prescription to anyone at risk of an overdose or to a family member or friend willing to administer the drug. The expanded distribution is part of a harm reduction strategy that will be introduced at the Board of Supervisors meeting in June. The county made naloxone available to law enforcement many years ago, since some overdose patients need immediate intervention to survive. An overdose from fentanyl can cause death in a matter of minutes. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says to look for these signs if you suspect someone is overdosing from opioids, whether prescription medications or street drugs such as heroin. Small, constricted pinpoint pupils, limp body, pale, clammy skin, blue fingernails or lips, vomiting or gurgling sounds, unable to speak or be wakened, loss of consciousness, slow breathing or slow heartbeat. The county offers prevention and treatment programs across the region. If you need help, you can call the San Diego Access and Crisis Line at 888-724-7240 or dial 211 San Diego. These resources are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Raina Menashe.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
San Diego County's summer movies in the park are back after being canceled last year due to COVID. This year, Summer Movies in the Park will be a hybrid series with showings on lawns in parks across our region, as well as viewings from cars and online, so you can choose your own movie adventure. Now in its 14th year, Summer Movies in the Park will be held in the cities of San Diego, La Mesa, Lemon Grove, Oceanside, Poway, and Vista, along with unincorporated areas such as Julian, Escondido, Lakeside, Pine Valley, Ramona, Rancho San Diego, and Spring Valley. It even includes several showings on the historic USS Midway ship. Most movies will be in parks with vast open space where you can set up chairs, spread a blanket, enjoy a picnic, and relish entertainment under the stars. Music will play before each show, with some parks offering live games and activities, while others will have food trucks. Five shows will be purely virtual, requiring an online RSVP and a code for 24-hour movie access. Your efforts will be rewarded with a free Movies at Home kit filled with recipes, games, and other activities. This season's movies include Toy Story 4, How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, Raya and the Last Dragon, and Soul. To celebrate National Parks and Recreation Month in July, you can watch Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest. 5 shows will be set up as park drive-ins, so you can pack the car, head down, and grab a spot near the big screen to enjoy classics like The Karate Kid, The Sandlot, and The Goonies. Parking will be limited at these events, so arrive early. All movies are rated G, PG, or PG-13, and clearly labeled when you download the full schedule of movies, which run from June through October. For a full listing of movies, you can visit summermoviesinthepark.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Raina Menashe.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. After a long hiatus due to COVID-19, many of East County's most popular events are finally coming back this summer. Descanso Days returns on June 5th at the historic Descanso Town Hall. A parade rolls out from 9 to 10 a.m., followed by a fair from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. This event will feature live music by Whiskey Ridge, a beer garden, cornhole and horseshoe tournaments, food from Descanso Junction, games, a raffle, and more. We recommend arriving early since the street shuts down for the parade. For tickets and details, you can visit descansotownhall.org. Butterfly season is back at the Water Conservation Garden, where you can release your very own butterfly every Saturday in June from 10 a.m. to noon at the Butterfly Pavilion. Tickets and reservations are required, and you can get them at thegarden.org. Kiwanis of Ramona will present the 14th celebration of National Cowboy Day on Saturday, June 26th from noon to 5 p.m. at the Ramona Outdoor Center. The event features live music by Steel Dawn, a children's fun zone, and a Western wear costume contest for kids 10 and under. Food, beer, and wine will be available for purchase, and you can buy for silent auction and raffle prizes. For more details, check out RamonaKiwanis.org. Get ready for some rockin' hot summer music concerts with dancing as El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert Summer Series returns starting July 2nd. That's a Friday night with a season-opening concert by Sully Band. The concerts will run every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. from July through October. These concerts are held in Prescott Promenade Park on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. Bring a picnic or arrive early to dine at one of the many restaurants nearby. In addition, El Cajon's Classic Car Nights are back every Wednesday night, also at Prescott Promenade. You can get a full list of concert performers and car show themes at downtownelcajon.com. The Mighty Untouchables will open Santee's Summer Concert Series on June 24th. The concerts will be held Thursday evenings, starting at 6:30 p.m. at 550 Park Center Drive. These concerts will run through August 12th, though not the July 4th week. Other groups booked in Santee include Back to the Garden, The Highwayman, Bill McGee Blues Band, Young Guns, and Pop Vinyl. Get more information at the City of Santee's website, cityofsantee.gov. San Diego County's Summer Movies in the Park are back with options for live viewings in parks across the county, as well as options for viewings from cars at some locations and some online showings, too. You can get a full list of movie showings at summermoviesinthepark.com. Not all events will be back and in person. The La Mesa Flag Day Parade will salute Old Glory with a virtual event from May 31st through June 14th. Take-home kits with activities are available to the first 100 households to sign up. You can learn more at cityoflamesa.us. If you're looking for laughs after a year of quarantining at the Space Bar Cafe and Wine Bistro in La Mesa, comedy is coming back on June 25th featuring top local talent. The fun starts at 7 p.m. with music followed by comedy at 7:30. Food, beer, and wine are available for purchase, and there's no cover charge. The lineup includes headliner Chris Klobert, noted for his comedy tours at the San Diego Zoo. Other performers include Iris Neal, a freelance writer for East County Magazine when not on stage delivering comedy, as well as Brendan Pranowitz, Tony Torcato, Scott Blumen, Matt Zint, Gene Levine, and Kent Olive on the keyboard. The Spaceport Cafe and Wine Bistro is located on University Avenue in La Mesa, and you can get more details at spacebar.com. That's literally ATSPACEBAR.com. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions across San Diego's East County.
As the spring gardening season gets into full swing, groups fighting to save bees and other pollinators are asking nurseries and consumers to avoid plants grown with harmful pesticides. Some pesticides are sprayed on, but others are systemic and poison the nectar. Sharon Salvaggio with the Xerces Society says gardeners may end up harming the pollinators they're trying to protect, so they need to ask questions before they buy.
What we want is for people to go to their nursery and say, I want plants that are free of pesticides that might harm pollinators.
Xerces has published a tip sheet for consumers on what to ask and another for nurseries on how to offer bee-safe plants. More than a quarter of all North American bumblebees are nearing extinction, and the Western monarch butterfly population has plunged more than 99% since the 1980s, a situation experts blame on pesticide use, climate change, and destruction of habitat. Sarah Hoyle, also with Xerces, co-authored a study in 2019 that tested native milkweed across the Central Valley for pesticides because it is a host plant for monarch caterpillars.
Pesticides were really ubiquitous kind of everywhere we looked, home gardens, parks, agricultural lands, and wildlife refuges. We were finding that pesticides were present and really all too often at lethal levels.
Kendra Klein with the nonprofit Friends of the Earth says her group published a report in 2014 called Gardeners Beware and later secured commitments from Lowe's, Home Depot, and other nursery chains to stop selling plants grown with neonicotinoids and other harmful pesticides.
These are pesticides that are highly acutely toxic to bees and other pollinators and are known to be a driver of what some scientists call an insect apocalypse, major declines in pollinator and insect populations around the world.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.